Welcome back, everyone, as we bring you another episode of the Leverett Ball Show. As always, you can subscribe to LBS on all of the major podcast platforms, iHeartRadio and YouTube. And before we get started, I want to give another quick shout out to our sponsors, Radical Strength and Fitness, Hans McGrath Real Estate, and Santana Company Barbershop. And our guest today is Carlos Dansby. Football fans, you may remember him. He played in the NFL as a linebacker from 2004 through 2018, and he played with the Cardinals, Dolphins, Browns, and Bengals. And he's also, if any Auburn fans are tuning in, an Auburn alum as well, played with a number of future NFL guys there at Auburn. So, Carlos, welcome.
Oh, man, appreciate it, brother. Appreciate for having me, man. Appreciate for having me.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've talked with a lot of guests about, like, what a weird year it was in 2020. Now heading into 2021 with the pandemic, life has changed. But, you know, now that you're retired from the NFL and, you know, we've had a weird past year, you know, what have you been up to?
Oh, man, what I've been up to, man, is trying to revitalize my community back in Birmingham, Alabama. I've transitioned out of the game into land and business development. Right now, I've put together a platform, not only just for myself, but for other former football players and players that are still active, to be able to go back to their communities and get into the mix, man, and help redevelop these communities across the country.
Well, and, you know, you grew up in Alabama before, you know, you mm-hmm. played in Auburn and then went on to the NFL. And, you know, how important is it for you? You know, I'm sure, like anyone, you know, you had mentors growing up, you know, who helped you, you know, get to where you are now. But how important is it for you now that, you know, you've played in the NFL to give back and kind of inspire the next generation in the area that you grew up?
I mean, it's very important. It's very important. Like I said, we don't have a NFL-based team here in Alabama, but we got Alabama and Auburn. So it's just like an NFL team.
Yeah.
So we get a chance to check them out every weekend, man, and get inspiration as kids growing up here. And like I said, to have an NFL player come back home, man, and try to instill some of these things that I learned around the world into these kids, man, it's an honor to be in this position because nobody came back when I was coming up, you know. So I didn't have an opportunity. I didn't have access to anybody if they did come back and I missed them. I didn't have an opportunity to get in camps or anything like that or have anybody come back and talk about the next level. So I'm just excited to be in position to do it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's awesome. And, you know, I have, you know, a few questions about, you know, your career itself and your upcoming Hall of Fame eligibility, but also kind of building mm-hmm. off what you said, you know, you talked about how, like, when you were younger, there was no one to prepare you for the next level. What are some things in regards to life in the NFL, some things you didn't expect that you, you know, wish maybe you'd be better prepared for?
Man, everything under the sun, everything under the sun, man. It came at you so fast. Because, like you said, the politics of the game, not only the politics of the game, just, you know, you out there with grown men. These guys are here fighting for their families, man. So there's a lot of things I've seen and I got a chance to experience that I never knew was taking place behind the scenes. And I think if I'd have had somebody come back and tell me about that part of the game, I think I'd been better prepared. And it would have made my job even easier just going out there having fun.
Well, and you're absolutely right. You know, the business of pro sports is so different on the inside than it looks from the outside. And, you know, I never played at that level, but, you know, from covering, you know, the NFL and Major League Baseball and some other leagues, even seeing it from that angle, you know, when you have a press pass in the locker room, it's so different, you know, from how people would think, you know, the way the business works behind the scenes, the culture, everything. And it's, in a lot of ways, not as glamorous as it looks from the outside.
Exactly, man. It's a job. It's definitely a job, man. And people don't understand that, man. You being that 18-hour days, 15-hour days, bro, it starts to wear on you fast as you see all the grays coming in. As they come in, you know what I'm saying? It wears on you fast, man. So it changes the whole your thought patterns and your thought process, man, as you move through year in and year out, dealing with all the adversity.
Well, and no question. And, you know, now that you're retired, you know, you're approaching your eligibility for the Hall of Fame. You were an all-pro linebacker in the NFL. And you're, you know, in some exclusive clubs, one of which being that you're one of only five players in league history with both 40 or more sacks and 20 or more interceptions. So you're definitely, you know, an all around player. You know, you didn't just focus in too much on one area, but, you know, one thing we talked about, you know, the other day off the air was that despite, you know, being named all pro and putting up those numbers, you were never actually invited to a Pro Bowl. And I mean, kind of building off that, do you feel as though you were underestimated, and would it be nice to kind of put a nail in the coffin and kind of close the argument by making the Hall of Fame?
I think so. I think I was underestimated. I think I was overlooked a lot. People seeing some of the things I was able to do out there on the field, and they like, well, you're making it look too easy. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, anybody can do it. You know, that's how I viewed it myself. And I'm talking about because I had one coach tell me, man, it was too funny. He said, man, I'm watching you on film. He said, it seems like, you know, nobody runs away from you. He said, but you don't look like you're moving. I'm like, Coach, I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. I said, I don't know. It's a gift. You know, it's a gift that's been given to me, and I used it well. You know, I had some great coaches, and I had some great toolage, man. I'm talking about from college all the way up, you know, playing at this position. And then I studied the game well, you know. So I'm watching everybody's strengths, trying to figure out everybody's strengths and weaknesses, from running backs I played with to the linebackers that played my position that I admire, you know. So I try to put it all there. I try to be a sponge as much as I possibly could. And every year I figured something out new to add to the arsenal. And it just stuck with me, man. And it made my game just overall pretty versatile.
Well, and like you said, you know, you were an instinctive player and you were, you know, in the right place at the right time a lot. And, you know, sometimes you made plays that weren't that easy look easy. And, you know, what's funny is, like, on the other hand, you know, and maybe because of that, you know, you're underestimated. But on the other hand, there are guys, certain NFL players I've watched who I think were overrated. And, you know, I'm not going to say names or throw shade at anyone. You know, they might be buddies of yours from your time in the league. But, you know, guys who, like, maybe they weren't that good, but they'd occasionally make that highlight reel play or, mm-hmm. you know, whatever, the flashy play, the sexy play, whatever you want to call it. And they get in the highlight reels. And, like, there were those guys who, like, I read an article about a player once, an NFL running back, that said, if you watch his highlights on SportsCenter and you watch his commercials and see his pictures in magazines, you'd think he's one of the best players in the league. He isn't. Yeah. He's the best player in the league apart from his performance on the field. You know, it's almost like a brand thing, or they're like an entertainer. If you're just, you know, solid and reliable, there isn't as much flash. But do you think, kind of like you said, because you made it look easy, that contributed to just maybe people not noticing how well you're playing?
Well, not only that, man, I just think I played on some great teams too. As I played through my career, I played on some pretty good, I had some pretty good players around me. So I knew we was going to be getting watched a lot as a team. So I just tried to do my part a lot. And as me doing my part, you know, like I said, I was just very consistent. I make a flash play here and there. I expected to make so many plays, so it was natural for me. But like you said, if I made it look easy, then they were like, oh, well, I can put another linebacker in there, probably do the same thing. And that's not the case. And like I said, I just had a gift for this thing, man. It was beyond me. Put it like that. It was beyond me. And I enjoyed every second of it, too.
Well, and, you know, what is kind of your mentality you know, in approaching the Hall of Fame, you know, I guess different guys react to it different ways. You know, some guys kind of have the attitude like it's out of my control. There are other guys, you know, they're thinking about it all the time. I know this is a different sport, but I had some mutual friends who knew Jim Rice, the baseball player, and he made the Hall of Fame after being on the ballot and not getting in multiple times. He finally made it. He said it actually affected his blood pressure on like a day-to-day basis. Like, but what's the mentality like for you? Are you kind of at peace with it either way, or, you know, is it that significant to you?
Oh no, it's that significant.
Yeah.
I'm going to put it out there right now. Yeah. It's that significant. Uh-huh. You know, like I said, I want to quiet the critics, right? Mm-hmm. When it's all said and done, anybody else, any other linebacker that you put in, they're not going to have the numbers. by far. I don't care who they are. It's only five of us. It's only five of us, right? And two of the guys in the group, they still not in the Hall of Fame.
Uh-huh.
And those were the first two. Those were the first two still not. Steph Joyner. My bad, Steph Joyner and Wilbur Marshall. Those two are not in. And both of them got Super Bowls and everything, you know? So I don't understand. I don't understand. But the other two just got in 19 or 18, 19, something like 18, I think 19. Erlach and Ray Lewis went in, you know, but they all got similar stats. They all been to the Super Bowl. They all been to Pro Bowls. Mm-hmm. I'm the only one in that group without a Pro Bowl and an All Pro.
Because
that's a second team All Pro. There ain't no All Pro. Second team All Pro is not All Pro. That's just how they look at it, I guess. I don't know. But that's how I'm viewing it. And me going into this Hall of Fame, and I'd be the only one out of 100 years of football to make it without a Pro Bowl. Bruh, you talking about special? I had to be. I had to be one of the best ever to do it because of that notion that I got these stats with the best of the best, the top five ever in the game to play the game and, well, record it. Now, don't say play the game, record it. Because there's a lot of linebackers that didn't have their stats recorded that was monsters out there prior to, you know, these guys getting in. And I'm just honored to be in that class, bro. I'm honored because there's so many other linebackers that I looked up to that didn't even consider trying to get in or even knew it existed. You know, they was just playing the game because they loved it.
Well, definitely. And, you know, of, you know, some of the different defensive players we talked about, guys who either have made it or haven't made it, are there any – you know, players you've either seen play in person or watched back in the day or have watched since you retired who remind you of yourself as far as like their playing style, being a guy who can both drop back in coverage and rush the passer?
Oh, man, this is a great question. This is a great question because there's a lot of them. It's not that many, but it's a few of them that I stand up and I'm like, yeah, that's what I'm talking about. That's football. That's linebacker play. That's the one. Coming into the game, I used to watch a lot of what's my guy's name? Is on top of my Julian Peterson. Julian Peterson was one of the guys I really watched because when I came in the game, I was playing Sam in a 4-3. So Carlos Edmonds, Julian Peterson, those guys played the Sam linebacker. So I'm watching them. Every game they played, I'm watching. I'm seeing Julian Peterson run back at safety and everything. So I'm geeked because I'm coming in. I'm like, okay, I ain't got that many years. I'm a building linebacker, so I need to find out how to play this game. Now playing Sam linebacker in the 4-3 under, and I'm like, okay, cool. Watching these guys, mimicking these guys, looking how they extend their arms and all that kind of stuff. Then I started to transition and go to the wheel linebacker. And now I'm looking at Donnie Edwards. He is the truth. By far, I don't care what nobody says. This guy should be in the Pro Bowl. This guy got 28. He got, 28 interceptions, 20-plus sacks. Like, he was a dog. I mimic his game all the way down to the sleeves. All the way down to the sleeves. Like, he about 6'3", 230 pounds. I was 6'3", 230 pounds. Like, I mimic his game. To the T, man. Then when I seen him move and transition to the middle linebacker, I said, man, I got to do it too. So by the time I finished my career, I was at Mike linebacker doing the same thing, getting off blocks, making interceptions, getting to the quarterback. And he was the main one I watched, man. I watched him so much. I watched his game so much. Like I said, I mimic him all the way down to the sleeve. And then one guy scared me, man. Tevin Smith? I think that was his name, Tevin Smith. He was down in Jacksonville. He ain't played last year. I think he walked away from the game about two seasons right now. Man, that kid up, man, getting the interceptions and getting to that end zone. He's a playmaker. I hate he walked away from the game because I knew he was going to break. He was going to probably be the number one linebacker with interceptions for touchdowns. Right now, I'm tied at first place with Derrick Brooks. And Mr. Bobby Bell, you know what I'm saying, with six interceptions for touchdowns. People don't even know that. People don't even know that stat, that I'm tied for the first place in NFL history with interceptions for touchdowns with Derrick Brooks, like out of all people. You know what I'm saying?
And, not a bad guy to be associated with.
Not him or Mr. Bobby Bell. Yeah. You know, yeah. I'm a fan of both. I'm a fan of both. And I love the way they play the game, you know. And for me to be tied with them, man, and nobody even know that I'm tied with them, like, for first place, man, that's a compliment in itself, man, you know. So I'm geeked at that. And right now, I think it's Fred Warner out in San Fran. Yeah. He that real deal. He the real deal. He remind me of myself with the range, his ability to get off blocks and get to the quarterback as well and playing space, you know, making them open field tackles one-on-one. If you're able to do that, man, you can do it. You can do anything you want to do out there when you're able to do that. And he has that size and that range, man, that you can't teach that. You know, that's got to be given to you by God, you know. So you can't teach that, man. And he got that. So he's using it well, and he's learning to use his body and get in certain angles and use his leverage, man, to get off blocks and make plays. So I'm geeked to see how far his future really goes.
Well, and, you know, all those guys, they, like you said, they have a similar style to you as far as being well-rounded players. And, like, I feel as though if you have that skill set, your role could change from game to game. You know, one game you could be, you know, blitzing a lot. One game you could be dropping back in coverage a lot. And a lot of it's based on, you know, how the game is going, what the team needs at that specific time. But, you know, that's more common in today's game than it has been in previous years, as far as, like, you know, the linebackers can do everything. Back in the day, you know, the traditional linebacker was just a very big physical run stopper and not a dynamic guy who could do lots of different things. Now, we talked about how, you know, there were a couple of years when you had really good numbers and you were overlooked for the Pro Bowl. Do you think, you know, let's say you had played during the 2020 NFL season and put up similar numbers, you would have been chosen for the Pro Bowl because people are more understanding and aware of how helpful that style of play is now versus when you played?
I doubt it very seriously, man, because, you know, it's just the nature of the position, man. You know, if you're not on a team that's super hyped up right now, you're not going to get that recognition. Mm-hmm. You know, check Bobby Wagner out, man. Bobby Wagner's a stud. Mm-hmm. Bobby Wagner's a stud, man. But people just put him to the back burner like he don't even play the game. You know what I'm saying? Are they crazy? Like, are they really watching football? Like, this man is a truth, you know? But that's just the nature of the game. That's just how the game go. These young guns going to get it, like Levante David, you know, White. They down there. They winning Super Bowl. Like I said, they won a Super Bowl. So they're going to get all the hype and all the recognition right now. But like I said, guys like Fred Warner playing in San Fran, you know, he's a dog, but he's not going to get that recognition like that because of the simple fact that, you know, people not seeing them on that stage.
That's very true. You know, it's the team you're on, the market you're in. You know, if you're playing in, you know, LA or New York City, you know, you get that added exposure. And some really good players in smaller markets don't get it, you know, like you said. But also, you know, as far as, you know, we've talked a lot of defensive players, but, you know, one guy I wanted to ask you about was an offensive player and a guy who's, you know, in the Hall of Fame currently and has spoken highly of you in the past, and that's Kurt Warner. Mm-hmm. He was your quarterback when you played on the Cardinals. You know, what was it like getting to play with him and getting to know him?
Man, Kurt abused me every day in practice. And I'm going to put it out there right now. But he taught me so much, though, you know, in that process. It was a learning curve that I had to get over because I was so tied into making a big play. We used to go against each other every third. We used to call it what it is. It was every Thursday we went against offense. It was best out of five. And whoever loses got to run. You know what I'm saying? But that's how we made our run in the Super Bowl that year. But we had to compete against each other at the end of practice every Thursday just to see how good we really are. You know, and man, he used to stack me every time, man. He'll put a guy right behind me and put one right in front of me. And it's third and short. So I got to try to make the play on the third and short guy. He hit the guy right behind me every time. So he just kept doing me like this. And I just kept getting frustrated. I said, Kurt, man, you just gonna keep playing games with me like this. You know, we can't hit you. We can't touch you. So you just gonna hold the ball and, man, get rid of the ball. You know what I'm saying? You ain't gonna have this kind of time in the game. But it taught me a lesson, taught me to be patient. You know what I'm saying? So things like that. And it led me to making interceptions, man, and getting to where I'm at right now. So I appreciate him schooling me like that and teaching me, man, and educating me about little things like that in the game that that can go a long way. And it got me in the position I'm in.
Well, and, you know, I've asked guys this before, you know, how many of their teammates they keep in touch with, you know, ex-teammates. You know, mm-hmm. Since you've gotten out of the NFL, you know, do you still stay in close contact with a lot of guys you play with?
Definitely, man. I stay in contact with a lot of guys, you know, especially on social media now, man. We got so much access now, man. It's insane, you know what I'm saying? Growing up through the ranks, man, we ain't have all this access.
Right.
So now, man, it's very easy to get in contact with guys, man, that I haven't played with, you know, in Cleveland, when I was in Cleveland, you know, that these guys now getting an opportunity to really experience the NFL and, you know, I'm giving them words of wisdom and encouragement, you know, and helping them out along the way, man, as they going through their trials and tribulations and their adversity that they facing in these different organizations. And it's a process, right? So you gotta reach out to your brother and check on them, make sure they're good. You know, because like I said, it's a lot that goes into this, man. And the mental health piece of it is very, very, very important, man. And make sure the guys that you used to bond with are doing well. Is doing well at this time.
Definitely. Well, and I think it's good now that, you know, people are more comfortable talking about the mental health aspect, like you said, than in the past. And, you know, maybe it's easier for guys to talk to their teammates about that type of thing than maybe it was 20 years ago. You know, so, and I've talked to actually athletes in various sports, about that, about how, like, kind of the culture in sports when it comes to talking about those types of things has changed. Lars Anderson, former Red Sox player I interviewed a while back, like, he came into the Major League Baseball right when teams started hiring, therapists. And that was like, literally, like, his first year was like the year that Major League Baseball kind of transitioned into taking those things more seriously and being open about them. But also, you know, another guy, you know, you were in Cleveland at the time of Johnny Manziel, and he actually is playing again now. I bring him up because he's been in the news. He's in the fan-controlled league. You know, what was it like, you know, playing with him, and could you see him getting back into the NFL?
I think it's going to be hard for him to get back in the NFL. I mean, once you're out, man, it's tough to get back in, right? So him playing in the fan control league, man, I'm just glad he got an opportunity to express himself, you know? So most guys don't get an opportunity to even play in any league, you know? And for him to have another opportunity to express himself, man, proud of him, man. And the things we had a chance to experience in Cleveland with him, you know, he had his moments. He had his opportunities, you know? He took much advantage of them he possibly could. And it just didn't pan out the way he wanted to pan out at the end of the day. But he got that experience, and nobody could take that experience away from him. You know, he did it. He made it. And he did what he could do at that level and at that moment. You know, so like I said, my hat goes off to him for even sticking with it and continuing to try to fight for that dream, to live it out and experience it, man. That's a blessing to have that opportunity to do it. Yeah,
he was a fun guy to watch. I mean, he was, especially, you know, in college, some of the plays he made were like, it looked like straight out of a video game. It was ridiculous.
Right.
But
I seen some of the highlights. I seen some of his highlights. Yeah. Man. He was like his old self. So
yeah,
he's moving and throwing the ball around. He having fun, man. At the end of the day, that's all you want, man, is opportunity. He got opportunity. So he's making the most of it.
Well, was he a cool guy? I mean, what was it like getting to know him off the field?
Man, Johnny was the coolest cat in the building. You know, like I said, man, my kids love Johnny. You know what I'm saying? So, like, it was the whole nine, man. He was that superstar, you know? He was that superstar, man, without even really even stepping on the field. It's Johnny Manziel, you know? He's been able to get in that kind of position, man, to be that guy, that rock star of the NFL, man. And he was that man. He was the man. I can't take that away from him. You know what I'm saying? That's his position.
Yeah, and no question. And, you know, also, you know, kind of moving forward, we've talked about your Hall of Fame candidacy. And, you know, at the end of the day, what means the most to you in terms of your legacy? Would you say it is the Hall of Fame? Would you say it's, you know, your relationship with your teammates, you know, individual successes you had? I mean, all in all, you know, when you think about your legacy, how do you want people to remember your NFL career?
Wow. Man, that's a great question. That's a great question. I think it's all of the above, you know. I think it's a combination of my experiences with my teammates, the journey we went on. We'll never forget it. We always bringing it up, you know. And, man, you know, the Hall of Fame would be the icing on the cake, you know, because the journey and the experiences I got with my teammates, man, nobody can take that away from me. Nobody. I don't care how you want to cut it. You can't do it. You know, I had a ball, I had a blast, memories forever, you know, and then, like I said, it's on film. So the eye and the sky don't lie, right? So that's something, that's a little saying we say all the time, the eye and the sky don't lie. So it's on film, it's there. And it'll outlive me. So my legacy will be, I hope it'll be etched in stone with this bus, you know, going up in the Hall of Fame.
Definitely, definitely. And, you know, also, you know, when you, you know, retired, mm-hmm. was there ever, you know, any thought of trying to come back to add to your stat line to improve your case? Or were you comfortable with where you were once you got out of the league?
Man, you asking all the right questions right now. You asking all the right questions. See, I'm a man. Look, when I got out, I was cool with getting out. And I'm going to tell mm-hmm. you why I was cool with getting out. Because I didn't want to go in and get no charity. Oh, man, he been in the league for so long. We might well go and get him a Pro Bowl type ordeal. No. No, 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 no. I was happy to get out. Because now I can be the only one ever, I mean, ever to get into the Hall of Fame without a Pro Bowl. That right there is legacy for me. That right there will be etched in stone forever. And it probably will be, it will never be another. I don't think it'll never be another guy that can get into the Hall of Fame without making a Pro Bowl. I think I'd be the only one ever to be able to say I did that.
Well, and, you know, some athletes, they keep lists of people who have doubted them. You know, Tom mm-hmm. Brady, I don't know if you saw the video he posted after he won his last Super Bowl, like calling out specific critics. You know, right. Is there any, you know, writer out there who or reporter, anyone in the Hall of Fame, you want to call them out? Like, you know, are you going to come on the show and be like, hey, Lever, I heard you were talking crap about my career. Like, you were wrong. I was right. Is there anyone you're going to hit up the second you get into the Hall of Fame?
Man, see, I told you, man, you asking all the right questions right now, man. I don't want to give away. I don't want to give it all away, man.
Yeah.
I can't give it all away. But I got one person.
Uh-huh.
I got one person, man. And I want to thank him right now because he lit a fire up under me. He lit a fire up under me, man, my second year in the league. He lit a fire up under me, man. And he ain't went out. It still ain't went out. You know what I'm saying? So I appreciate him for pushing me and making his comments the way he made his comments. Cause I know where he got it. I know he got his comment. I know he got it. I know who his source was to go into that detail, you know what I'm saying, of what he put out there. So I appreciate him. I thank him. And when I get in, I make sure I let it be known.
And so that'll be, you know, one of those things, you know, once you get to the hall, we'll know who that person is. It'll be a secret until then. I'm going to take a crazy guess. You don't have to say yes or no. My crazy guess is Skip Bayless. Like, half the athletes in America are pissed off at him. And he's pissed off everyone.
Man, look, Skip ain't never mentioned me. Skip ain't never mentioned me, which blows my heart. You know what I'm saying? I wish I would have been mentioned by Skip or Shannon, any one of them. Mm-hmm. But, you know, doing what I've been able to do out there on the field, man. And like I said, it goes overlooked until the numbers come out. And when the numbers come out, they're going to have to say, man, everybody can't do this. Mm-hmm. They can't do it on that level, man. It's hard to get there. Like I said, I got guys that I admire playing the game. Tequio Spikes. I think he won interception away from being in the 40-20 club. He got the sacks, but I don't think he got the interception. He missing that one interception. He got like 19. And then you got a guy like London Fletcher, who I think he like one sack away. You know what I'm saying? So these guys was one play away from being in an elite class. And these guys are some elite linebackers. These ain't no scrubs, man. These are elite linebackers. Some of the best to ever play the game. But they're not in this elite club. You know, so, yeah. I'm excited about it. I can't wait. Both of them guys went to the Pro Bowl. Both of them. I'm the only one that hasn't been. And I'm the only one that's been overlooked. But when the numbers come out, everybody got to say something. Everybody got it. They got to look at him. They can't turn their eye to it. They got to say, man, look, he did it. I've been to a Super Bowl, made plays in the Super Bowl, was leading the tackles in Super Bowl almost. You know what I'm saying? I had eight. You know, and an interception. People overlook the interception in the Super Bowl. Like, come on, man. Like, you know how hard it is to get there, first of all, and then to lead, almost lead in tackles and get an interception? It's tough. It's tough, man. It ain't easy. I hate we lost it because we the one I've been almost probably been in the defense MVP. But ain't no telling. Yeah, he's been between me and Doc or somebody like that. But I was there. I made my run for it, you know, and I haven't looked back since.
Yeah, well, and, you know, like you said, you know, you definitely had a great run. I think all of our listeners and viewers, your second year in the league was 2005. They're going to Google every single Carlos Dansby article that was written in 2005 and try and guess. So that's actually a challenge for our listeners and viewers. Get on your get on the internet, start looking. But you'll give that guy a shout out.
It's gonna be easy, man. As soon as they go to look and they're gonna see it. It ain't gonna be hard.
My final guess, let's say you were currently playing and you said there's a reporter pissed you off. I think it was Colin Coward. You've seen the stuff he says about Baker Mayfield. He makes enemies with certain players.
No, but, it wasn't him.
Yeah.
It wasn't him. It wasn't him, man. So, you know,
he wasn't as well known in 2005.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, man. So, like I said, this is the thing. This is the thing with me. This is the thing about me. Those analysts didn't talk about me like that. You know, only one talked about me good was, Gruden and Trent Dilfer. Mm-hmm. Those only two, you know, and I just had did a thing with Trent Dilfer not too long ago, and he told me, he was like, man, you're the most versatile linebacker that ever played the game. And he said, and during the stretch, he listed me as the best linebacker in the game. And like I said, people overlook it because I made the game look so easy. I made it look so effortless, man. And but it was so much hard work that went into it. Trust me, it was no disrespect towards the game whatsoever from me. Not one player, not my approach. Man, I had to train for my running backs that I was playing against. That's how detailed I was with this thing, man. I didn't take it lightly because I wanted to be the best ever. I find out what their weaknesses was, and I attacked their weakness. I attacked their weakness every week. Week in, week out, I was a different running back, and I trained that week leading up to it for that running back. And sometimes I had to, like, somebody like Marshawn Lynch. Shit, I was training all season for this one moment. I was training all season. Every Monday after any game, that Monday was dedicated for him for that one moment. It was him that one moment, like in 13. It was him for that one moment in 13. It was for that. And every Monday, I got in, got up under them squats for that one moment. And when we went up to Seattle, I had that one moment with him. It was just me and him, when nobody else to be found. And I turned him around and I put him on his head. So it was me and him in the hole. When nobody else there, just me and him. And then when Russell Wilson looked at me, I went to yelling at him. After that, and then he just turned his head and looked down, and I knew we had them beat. They haven't lost in 2 years during that time. They haven't lost in 2 years at home. But I was training for that one moment because I knew if I took him out, the rest of it was going to be easy. We'll handle the rest of them, you know what I'm saying? So he was the guy. He was their man. He was their bell cow. They were going to lean on him. And shit, we threw four interceptions that game. Four in the red zone. Bruce Arians. Yes, we threw four interceptions in the red zone with Carson Palmer. But you go back to that 13 film and you watch that one moment and you're going to see the whole game change after that one moment, because then we knew we had him because it was just one-on-one. When nobody else there, when I turned him over and put him on his head, got up yelling and everything, all the guys were jumping around, game was over right there in that moment. We had took him. Yeah.
So you,
I think yeah. he even spoke on it.
He's Marshawn like did.
Yeah, he did an interview. He said the hardest he ever been hit was by me. It was that moment. They ain't show it. They showed another tackle that I made on him, and that wasn't it. But that one moment, oh man, it was real.
So you went beast mode on beast mode.
I had to, because I knew the time was coming. I knew it was. Look, man. Thanos said it was inevitable. Like it was there. Like it wasn't no way around it. We was gonna have that one moment where it was just gonna be me and him, and I wasn't trying to lose. So I was training all year for that one moment on that Thursday. Well, no, on that second game that we played, we lost to him on that Thursday night, but we knew we had to go up there and play them at home, and we got them. I ended the game with an interception too.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and I think, you know, they probably won't, invite you anywhere in Seattle. They're probably still bitter at you. But you know what's funny, actually? Two guests ago, I had Reggie Walker on, former Chargers linebacker.
Yeah.
And actually, he was also a Cardinal at one point. You guys may have overlapped. Mm-hmm. But he was talking about when he was on the Chargers, a hit he made on Russell Wilson. And now we're talking about your hit on Marshawn Lynch. People are going to think I hate the Seahawks. I just have people coming on and talking about how they've been pummeling, you know, Marshawn Lynch, Russell Wilson. But yeah, I have no ill will against the Seahawks. Nothing. Just I want to clarify that to everyone. But also, you know, obviously, I'm glad you're able to come on today, and you know, I'm rooting for you with the Hall of Fame bid. And you know, obviously, I think your stats speak for themselves, and we talked about some of the specifics, but. Before we wrap up, you know, if there's like, you know, one final sales pitch, like my talent manager for broadcasting talks to me about my elevator pitch. You know, you tell people, you know, about yourself, what you want to do, why you're the right guy. If you have one final sales pitch as to, you know, why Carlos Dansby belongs in the Hall of Fame, what would that be?
Oh, that's great. Great question. That sale pitch would be, I gave it so much. I didn't disrespect the game, not one time. Played it from the ground up, the way it's supposed to be played. I inspired my teammates. I made everybody around me better. If I did, they made me better. I was inspired by other players, my peers in the game. And like I said, let's make history. Let's make history with this one move. I'd be the only one ever to make it in without a Pro Bowl. I think it'll be an honor to be that guy. I think I represent the Shield well and in the class of legends well off the field. As we move into, you know, the rest of my career, retired and off the field stuff. So like I said, I'm in the community, building up my community back home and going into these food deserts, trying to eradicate food deserts across the country. Like I said, I think I'd be a great ambassador of making history across the board. And like I said, I think that's my elevator pitch to the Hall of Fame right now. And like I said, I hope it works.
Well, and you know, that's awesome that, you know, you've taken all the things you've learned and applied it to your own career and having success on the field and then teaching the next generation of players. And also, like you said, having an impact in the community. So, you know, Carlos, you know, we'd obviously love to see you get into the Hall of Fame in the next couple of years. And thank you for coming on the Leverett Ball Show.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Leverett, man. Thanks for having me, man. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. So once again, that's Carlos Dansby. I'm Leverett Ball. Thanks for tuning into the Leverett Ball Show.